Hi, this is Lindy, the creator and host of Lindy's Audio Cafe, a podcast focused on positive and thought-provoking stories. Life gets busy, and in the race for happiness, we sometimes forget it's often the smaller things in life that truly matter. My podcast is focused on the stories that don't make tabloids, the basics that make you smile, the kindness of people who help make the world a better place. Yeah, we need a bit more of that. But before we get started, please be sure to hit subscribe on your podcast app so you don't miss future episodes. Thanks for listening.
Holy crap, look at the hail. Cracked the windshield over there. Banging like crazy. Cars are all stopped. Holy shit. Broken again. Oh my god. Holy.
It's gonna break.
Hello there, and welcome to Lindy's Audio Cafe. My name is Lindy, and I'm absolutely delighted to join you once again today. Brr, it's a little bit cold outside today. I got my neck warmer in case I get cold. It's snowing outside here in the Comox Valley. But guess what? That's not what I'm talking about today. I am joined today by a wonderful gentleman named Bob Wells. Now, Bob Wells actually is the mayor of the city of Courtney, right here in the beautiful Comox Valley. And Bob is also the proud father of three wonderful children. And we're going to talk a little bit today about some travel adventures they had this past summer. And believe me, with winter ahead of us, you're going to want to hear this story. Hi, Bob. How's it going today?
It's going fantastic. Like you said, it's snowing out, so it was kind of interesting. I'm always excited to see what it's going to be like at the end of the day if it snows all day. But other than that, yeah, having a great day.
Absolutely. You got your snow tires on. You're all ready for some adventures?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I even took out the four-wheel drive today. Usually, I got a little two-wheel drive minivan that I bomb around in. But today, I decided to upgrade to the SUV just for the day so I can pick up some stuff and be a little bit more sure-footed as needed.
I think that's a good idea. It's a little bit slippery out there today. Now, you've had some real adventures in your travels, and specifically, I'm talking about this past summer, and I probably should let you tell the story because it is quite a story.
Back this summer, we were going to a family reunion in Manitoba. So we were driving across the country for that. And when we were just outside of probably about a half hour south of Red Deer in Alberta, we saw these rain clouds and stuff. And we pulled over to the side of the road. My one son had to go to the bathroom, and we're taking some pictures of the clouds and stuff, and they looked like they were going a different way, and the weather was saying they were going a different way, so we weren't too concerned about it. And so we jump back in the vehicle and we start going, and all of a sudden you can sort of see it's starting to rain, and there's some lightning and thunder. So like any good parent, I put on Thunderstruck by AC/DC. So we're listening to that, and we're driving along, and probably, you know, 5 or 10 minutes later, all of a sudden we start to see some hail. And after probably a couple more minutes of hail starting, the windshield actually cracked. And as soon as the windshield cracked, the first thing I did was I pulled over to the side of the road, stopped the vehicle, and just wanted to make sure, like, you know, that it didn't crack anymore. I've never had hail crack a windshield before while I was driving, but I obviously didn't want to continue moving on the highway given the potential of something bad happening. So while we were sitting there, my kids want to know what hail was and how it was created. So I took up my little camera and was recording the hail and kind of explaining. Well, my idea was I was going to start explaining how hail is formed by, you know, being, you know, rain being pushed up into the atmosphere and coming back down and the whole freezing process. But as I started to talk, the windshield kept cracking. More hail was just cracking it more and more. And I was obviously fairly concerned. So probably after a minute or so, I actually just turned the phone off after swearing quite a few times and just told everyone in the vehicle to basically protect themselves with their blankets, because we all had blankets. And And so, like you said, I had my three kids there. So my teenagers, Megan and Connor, who are 15, and my youngest, Quinn, who was 11. But my mom was also with us. She was in the middle row with my son, Connor, and Quinn was up front with me. And then Megan was in the very back of the van. But we all basically wrapped ourselves in the blankets. And as we sat there, the hail basically just kept getting bigger and bigger, and the windshield was cracking more and more, and the little visors on the side of the vehicle, on the windows, they were cracking. We heard the sunroofs break. It was a nice dual sunroof vehicle, and you could basically just see that the hailstorm was getting worse and worse and worse. And the windshield just started looking like it was just going to fall right in. So Quinn and I basically had to start holding the windshield up with one arm protected by the blanket. And then with the sunroof, as the hailstorms stones were getting bigger, we had to also hold that up because the once the glass is broken, the little visor that they have in sunroofs, it's just made out of either thin plastic or cardboard or something, but it's not really designed to take hailstones, which at the worst point were probably about the size of grapefruit or softballs, like, you know, pretty big hailstones. In fact, the largest hailstones in the history of Canada, so that have ever been recorded. So yeah, so they were absolutely crazy. The windshield basically got blown completely in. We were able to hold it so it didn't actually break through, but the actual window had come down and was almost touching the dash. That's how sort of pushed in it had become. And probably one of the more dangerous things is that every time your windshield gets a crack in it, it's got sort of a laminate in the middle. So it's two pieces of glasses. So that little part in the middle keeps it from just shattering. But it also means that because of the repeated hits, all these little tiny shards of glass are just flying around. And in fact, there was actually, like, on the dash and just basically everywhere, it looked like snow from all these little tiny pieces of glass. And at one point, the rear window of the van where my daughter was, the side window, it blew through. So a hailstone was big enough that it actually blew through. The gas tank cover, it blew out. And yeah, so it was probably about a half an hour from when we stopped the vehicle with that first hailstone that cracked the windshield till the hail actually stopped and we could get out of the vehicle. So it was quite a long period of time. And, you know, once everything kind of settled down, we still waited a few minutes. We made sure everybody was okay. My daughter, who was by herself in the back, she was, as you can imagine, absolutely freaked out by it. And in one of the videos, well, the video that I was that I put online where I was going to talk about how hail's formed, you can hear her in the back getting more and more stressed by the hail and just the loudness, like just the deafening sound of all that hail hitting basically the whole vehicle over and over and over again for that long period of time. And yeah, and you know, once it basically stopped and we waited for about 10 minutes or so, making sure everybody was okay, and then trying to get out of the vehicle. And of course, we were all wearing sandals or Crocs. Most of us were barefoot. And so as you can imagine, there's just shards of glass everywhere. And so, yeah, basically trying to clean out our shoes and make sure we weren't causing ourselves too much damage. And then got out, walked around, saw the vehicle. I did a little video after we'd actually talked to the neighboring vehicles. So we kind of did a bit of a walk around the vehicles that were stopped that were closest to us, just to make sure everybody was okay. Again, a lot of damage, a lot of broken windows, side windows, rear windows, a lot of windshields that, again, had that sort of characteristic smashed in look that you get if somebody goes at it with a baseball bat for a half hour or so. And then I did a little video just basically to let people know that we were okay. The people around us were okay. So it looked as though people had stopped and, you know, basically tried to be safe, that they'd be all right. So that was a pretty exciting time. And it was also the day that I launched my campaign for running mayor. So it was a busy day. And of course, I was traveling across the country, so all the campaign stuff had been pre-done, and so I couldn't really pretend like I wasn't running for mayor. But it was certainly publicity I wasn't necessarily expecting. And in fact, that video got over 200,000 views on Facebook. And then there was all sorts of publications from newspapers across the country, radio stations, TV, et cetera.
Oh, I can only imagine. I know when I first saw it, I was like, I can't believe it. I mean, knowing you and knowing your family, I couldn't even imagine what it was like for the kids. And when I heard that video and I could hear poor Megan in the back screaming, I thought, oh, she must have been so frightened. Everybody must have been so frightened when that was happening. Like, that's unreal. Did anybody actually get hit with one of the big golf balls, or were they stopped by the vehicle before they came in?
No, nobody got hit by a hailstone directly. But I will say this, when we were holding up the visor, the sunscreen, yeah, our sunroof visor, when we were holding that up, that's how I knew how big the hailstones were, because they would hit. And they hurt so much for two reasons. So one, they hurt because it was basically a rock that was traveling at probably 100 kilometers an hour, or whatever hailstones travel at. And it was hitting extremely hard. And then the second thing is there's all these shards of glass everywhere. So every time it hit, there was like little shards of glass that would go in. And so, yeah, it was, although I would say nobody got hit directly, both Quinn, who was up front with me, and then my mom and Connor, who were in the middle row, they also had a sunroof. They were also holding it up. So, because if it had blown through, then we would certainly have been hit directly with those hailstones.
Yeah. How was your mom taking it this whole time?
Honestly, I think everybody was generally in shock. You hear Megan was probably the only one who is able to actually verbalize sort of the terror that I think we were all feeling.
Yeah.
We're basically in kind of survival mode in terms of, like I said, keeping those sunroof visors kind of up and functioning as best they could. But my knuckles were all bruised, and I had shards of glass that were just kind of impaled into them when we got out. So
I didn't know about that part of it. Now, what about Quinn? You said he was beside you. Did he have glass in his hands too, or was he bruised in his hands?
Yeah, no, it was a ton of glass, and I would say I didn't realize it right away, because again, we're in a bit of shock, and it's kind of hard to know what's going on. But if I like rubbed my arm or touched someplace, you could feel that there was glass in there. And then of course, as soon as, like, when we got out, we made sure everybody was okay. We called BCAA to say we needed a tow. And they said, oh, well, we'll be out there within an hour or two. And I said, well, you realize that there's a couple hundred cars that are actually pulled over and are potentially destroyed on the side of the road. And they said, oh, it's all good. We're totally fine. And then we called back in about an hour, probably a half an hour later. And at that point they said it could be 8 hours or more, depending.
8 hours.
Point, I can't remember the exact time. I've got it written down somewhere, but waiting 8 hours, best case scenario, didn't seem like a reasonable thing to do under the circumstances. And although the windshield was basically completely obliterated with all those shards of glass, so you couldn't see through it so well, in the upper left-hand corner, there was a part of the windshield that was less broken. And so basically I opened up my window on the side and look through there, and then kind of did the Ace Ventura pet detective thing with my head out the window to make sure that it was safe. And then we drove into Red Deer, which was about 20 kilometers, but we were only going about 20 kilometers an hour. And there was a huge lineup of traffic behind us, but nobody was passing. Everybody was in sort of very cautious mode. Nobody was tailgating or anything like that. So everybody was just giving each other lots of space. And we made it all the way into the hotel in Red Deer, got everything unpacked. And as you can imagine, everything had glass through it. Once we got it completely emptied, we parked it in the parking lot, and that's where we abandoned it. We just left it there for BCA to come and pick up.
I didn't even know you guys had to drive it after. So was everybody doing that? Like probably all couple hundred vehicles, everybody was pulling out, because I guess what else do you do, right? You need to get them somewhere. So, you know, could you see clearly through the windshield? I mean, I think, you know, it must have been hard. Was it at you? Were you just like going really slow, peeking through what you could see through, or how did you do that?
Just peeking and stuff. And it was still raining.
Oh, dear.
And one of the things that I think I had mentioned to you before is I use Rain-X windshield wiper fluid, which in and of itself helps the water bead away. So if that wasn't the case, if you just had a sheen of water, it would have made it really difficult to see through. But because the windshield had that Rain-X on it, it made it so you could actually see better then. And like I said, if I wasn't too sure, I just stick my head out. But given the fact that everybody was giving each other a wide berth and everyone was going nice and slow, it wasn't too bad. Certainly not something that you would expect that you would have to do. One of the things that happened, because we didn't really understand the scope of stuff, but probably within, I would say, even before we got out of our vehicle, so probably within about 5 minutes of the hail stopping, was when we had the first responders arriving. So I believe it was the RCMP did a drive-by, and so they just wanted to make sure everybody was okay. And then we had the ambulance and the fire folks go through as well, all within about the first 10 minutes after the hail actually stopped. So it was really good to see that happening. But they were like, they were sort of just sharing, there's hundreds and hundreds of vehicles in this. And so don't expect tow trucks to be coming anytime soon.
Well, that probably gave you a little bit of relief, though. There's always some kind of relief when you get those first responders and they show up and you just know you're not alone and you're out there with everybody else. And there is some extra helping hands along the way. And so now, how long was it, do you think? I mean, I know it's probably hard to track, you know, once you've been through that kind of trauma. But from the time you left to when you actually got to your hotel, do you figure you were half an hour, a couple hours in the car? How long a drive do you figure?
Oh, yeah, it was certainly, like, I know it was 20 kilometers just because, you know, we had Google and Google said 20 kilometers. And I was like, well, that's a nice even number. Going 30 kilometers an hour, I'm sure we were probably 45 minutes from the time we started driving. Because again, if the rain started heavier and there's parts where it became kind of foggy, we would just completely slow down. And like I said, the fastest we'd go is probably about 30 kilometers an hour. Part of that is for safety, but the other reason is the windshield, just from the wind, felt like it was going to push through again. Oh. So if we were going too fast, the windshield would actually just be wobbling almost like a sail or a sheet in the wind. It was very disconcerting. So that's why we just kept it at a nice slow pace.
Wow, that's huge. Then what happened from there? Now, you were not on your way home when this happened, right? You're in the middle of your vacation. So you had to get your vehicle replaced. I'm assuming it must have been a write-off, right? I'm assuming.
So a couple of few things. So, we're on day five of what was planned to be about a 3 week vacation. So we're in early days. While we were waiting that 5-10 minutes after the hail stopped, we called BCA, And they asked us, you know, what condition the vehicle was in. And if you look at my eclectic resume that I have, I used to be an auto body technician. And so I just simply said, you know, this thing's been hit by, you know, hailstones the size of grapefruit for a half an hour. Like there's not a straight piece of metal on this vehicle. It's a write-off. There's no way that they're going to be able to repair it. Which is unfortunate because like the motor and everything else, drivetrain, everything, tires, they were all totally fine. But from a body perspective, the windshields, the sunroofs, et cetera. So we got to the hotel in Red Deer. And one of the weird conversations that kind of comes back, because you're trying to like plan for stuff. And it's like, okay, we're going to need a rental vehicle. So again, one of those first phone calls while we were still inside the vehicle after the hailstorm was to my wife to say, hey, can you book us a hotel room to stay in? Because there's going to be hundreds of people who are going to need a place to stay tonight. So let's get that booked right away. We called the insurance company to make sure they were good and, you know, asked my wife to go on to Enterprise and see if they were able to find a rental car. And she wasn't able to find a rental car, but she did get us that hotel room that we drove to. And there was a parking lot full of, you know, smashed up cars. Ours was certainly the worst looking one, I would say. Some of them might have, you know, a half dozen or so, or maybe more kind of smashed in windshield, whereas our windshield was completely obliterated.
That's unreal.
You know, that night I tried to get us a rental car and we'd actually sent our kids in because the hotel we went to had a swimming pool. So they went, jumped into the swimming pool and had showers and stuff. And I sat there trying to get rental cars, which seemed very difficult. So if we looked for cars in Calgary, there were no cars. Red Deer, I couldn't find a large vehicle. We were a minivan with five people. All the luggage and toys and things that you would bring on a trip for 3 weeks, which includes a lot of food, coolers, inflatable mattresses in case we were staying someplace and we just needed to create a little bed for someone. So we had a lot of this stuff. And when we tried to rent a minivan, there were no minivans in Alberta. So because you can sort of change like what's the range of, you know, how far apart away do you want to look for a rental car? And the whole province of Alberta did not have a minivan. So I was able to find I believe it was like a Corolla or like some small Toyota car in Red Deer. And so I reserved that, but I was pretty sure it wasn't going to be big enough to get us across to Manitoba and back. And so I then looked in Edmonton. And again, as I said, there was no minivans whatsoever, but I was able to find a Jeep Grand Cherokee. And so that seemed at least bigger than the car that I was getting. So I was like, okay, well, that gets us something bigger. And so with that, you know, it was a pretty exhausting day. As I mentioned, it was also the launch of my campaign. So I was getting phone calls and emails to do interviews. I was getting phone calls and emails and stuff to do interviews about the hailstone storm that had happened. But I was pretty exhausted. As you can imagine, it was a very exhausting situation. Had a shower and stuff. And so in the morning when we woke up, I had gotten a message from a cousin who I'd never met before, Jason. And so Jason just said, hey, I live near Red Deer. Do you need any help this morning? And so I said, honestly, it'd be great if you could just take me from the hotel to the rental car place, because then that it's just one less thing I have to deal with. And it'd be great to meet family. The whole we're going to a family reunion. So the whole trip was to meet family we'd never met before and to catch up with those that we hadn't seen for years. And so, so he came down and picked me up and we went down to the rental car place. And And when we got to the rental place, there was a lineup of probably 10 or 15 people out the door. And so we're kind of winding our way in, and I can hear them, you know, with people ahead of me saying over and over again, there are no rental cars. Wow. And there won't be any rental cars for probably 5 days. And so when I got to the front of the line, that's what the lady had said to me. And one of the things I think that happens when people are in stressful situations, and again, you're getting bad news, is sometimes you react to the person who is literally just the bearer of bad news, or just the messenger. It's not tough their job. Fault. They didn't do anything wrong. So I was very empathetic. I'd heard other people who had given her a lot of stress and grief. And so I said, don't worry about us. We're alive. We're not dead. Nobody's seriously injured. And I said, but if you could do one thing for me, I said, like, I booked this other vehicle in Edmonton. Can you check to see if that vehicle is available for us? And again, there's this lineup out the door. And she said she would have to call the same phone number as me. And so she said, if you don't mind, you know, if I could call it. And I was like, that's totally fine. You know, let you deal with,
you know,
because by the time I got up, there was still another 20 people behind me who had all, we all had confirmed, like, your car will be ready for you in the morning. And as somebody who has done some programming, is familiar with computers and such, you know, it's one of those algorithms where the whole rental car industry, it seems, goes on what is the average that's going to happen. So you're going to, on average, have this many rentals, and you're going to have this many returns. Therefore, this is what you can expect. And so it really shone a light on the fact that when you have a disaster like that, you know, it hadn't really dawned on me to start, you know, like asking my cousin, do you have a car we can borrow or something like that? Just didn't really pop into my brain. But anyways, while I was walking back out to the vehicle where my cousin was waiting for me, you know, I called Edmonton and I said, like, is this car waiting for us? If it is, you know, we're gonna have to drive there, and it's, you know, an hour or so away. And she was like, yeah, your vehicle's here. We got a key for you. We're gonna hold it till you get here. And so I got back to the vehicle, and I told my cousin, who I'd met about, you know, 20 minutes earlier, and had only driven me to a rental place, and we hadn't really even talked a whole lot at that point. And I said, you know, there's a vehicle, it's in Edmonton, so I'm gonna, you know, see if I can get an Uber or something to get up there, or maybe there's a bus or something. And Jason was like, no, your family, we're driving to Edmonton.
Nice.
And so off we went. We drove to Edmonton, and we're able to pick up that vehicle. And then, as you can imagine, he just picked me up in his truck, so we couldn't bring everybody. So while he drove me up to Edmonton to pick up the vehicle, my mom actually sat there washing all of our clothes and trying to get the glass out of everything. Was doing load after load after load. So we went up to Edmonton, got our vehicle, and then, of course, had to drive back to Red Deer because that's where all our stuff was. So we drove back to Red Deer, and it was only, I think, about maybe 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon at that point. And so we had a couple more loads of laundry to do, I think, but we kind of made the decision that, you know what, let's just drive up to Edmonton. We had a hotel that was reserved for Edmonton. We were supposed to be there the night before, obviously, but so we went up we're able to drive up. Wow. And able to fit everything into that Jeep Grand Cherokee. But again, one of the challenges was that we literally, except for me as the driver, everybody else had blankets and bags and stuff sort of stacked on top of them. So the whole back was completely packed. everybody was kind of packed up.
Probably all crammed in.
Exactly. Like
yeah. Everyone side to side. Don't move your elbow.
Absolutely. And of course, in the minivan, like, you know, everybody was sort of sitting with lots of space. But in the Jeep, you know, the three kids were like sardines in the back.
Oh, boy.
Because even with a Jeep Grand Cherokee, you know, when you've got basically, you know, three adult-sized children, they take up that much space. So it was a pretty tight compartment for them to fit into. So,
well, I guess you just tell people you're a tight-knit family, that's all. You're a real close family. But that's so cool, you know. And you know, when you're talking about all the things that happened after, so I mean, that's a pretty big deal. You're out on the road. You end up in this massive hailstorm and you're out there for, you know, quite a long time on the side of the road. Sorry, takes a while to get back to your hotel, but then there's all the aftermath that you had to deal with. And that's such a huge topic, like on any travel trip that you get involved in. If something like this happens, nobody predicts you're going to get hit with these massive, huge, grapefruit-sized golf balls. Nobody predicts that's going to happen in their day. And there's so many things that can happen on the road. And so, you know, in this particular trip, I mean, you had so much on the go at that time. Like you say, you had just announced your candidacy again for running for mayor for the city of Courtney. So, you know, your campaign had just launched that day. You're traveling with the family. You're trying to meet new family. You're trying to connect with all these things. You had a lot of pressure. But did you find when it was all done, were you exhausted? Were you emotionally exhausted from dealing with it?
Well, that night I certainly was. Like that night I was so absolutely just exhausted. And again, I kind of, you know, when we got back to the room, we sent the kids out to go swimming in the pool. And then I had to, you know, basically get those vehicles rented. But as soon as the vehicles were rented, and we had to get food brought in. we had some food delivered, but basically, my brain was done. The kids would be talking to me and I'd be like, I was like, my brain is jello. I'm completely unable to have a, you know, coherent conversation, I guess. And I'm a chatty guy. So my kids, they know I'm chatty. So when I'm saying, you know, I'm not able to really talk, I couldn't watch TV. Like I was just, I was like, shut my brain off, go to sleep. And that's that. And you know, there was, you know, those were those, you know, like in my mind, I'm also kind of going over the fact that like, okay, we need these rental vehicles, but like my mom's vehicle is, you know, in my mind, it's total. So, I was also going like, you know, well, from a rental perspective, like, is the insurance paying for rental? Are we paying for the rental? If she finds a vehicle she wants to buy on the trip, what does she do then? All those kinds of questions. And when we had originally called BCA, they said, well, don't worry, you get like $1,500 worth of rental. And so I looked online and what it was going to cost. And I was like, oh, okay, well, in a perfect world, that's like 30 days. So that's actually not so bad. Like that.
Not anymore.
enough to, or maybe it was 21 days, but it was enough to do the trip. And I was like, well, that's great. You've got your password book that that showed me there earlier, right? When I started my tech guys a few years ago, I guess 16 years ago, we gave all our customers a little book, a little My Tech Guys book that they could write down instructions and
just
passwords.
Like that.
And stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very much like that, except it had the My Tech Guys logo on it.
Oh, there you go.
And so I've got a couple still. So I brought one for the trip. And so
brilliant.
So when we're talking to BCA the first time, so this is right after the hailstorm, we still haven't gotten out of the vehicle. I take out my book, my mom's calling BCA. And so we're asking them questions like that, like how much rental do we get and what do we need to do? Like, what are the steps right now? Because of course you don't prepare for a car being destroyed while you're on a big trip. And they said, don't worry about it. Like, you know, if you get the rental and then leave your vehicle there. And I remember specifically asking, because I buy and sell a lot of vehicles, especially with my tech guys, but I was like, you know, what do we need to do with the license plate? And her answer was, well, don't worry about the license plate. Just leave it on the vehicle and it'll be sorted out through the insurance and the adjusters and stuff. And so I went, okay. So when we got to Edmonton, you know, again, I was pretty tired that night. We actually went to Red Lobster for dinner and I could barely keep my eyes open. And I'm eating lobster and I'm like, you know, I'm kind of tired. But, you know, and then the next day, we actually slept in. We didn't get up till probably about noon or whatever. And we took the kids, dropped them off at West Edmonton Mall where they wanted to go to the big pool there. And then my mom and I basically started looking for vehicles and started looking for bigger rental cars and stuff. So we drove around to the different enterprise rental places and nobody had anything bigger than what we had, if they had anything at all. But we also called BCA again and we said, you know, here's where we're at. If we buy a vehicle, we actually found a vehicle that was close. It was a minivan. It was all-wheel drive. It was a Toyota Sienna, which I've owned four of, so I'm obviously a fan of it. And so we called the BCA and we said, if we wanted to buy a vehicle, what do we need to do? And so the first thing she said is, well, if you've got your license plate, you just put your license plate on there. And that's the first thing.
Oh, no.
And I said, oh, the license plate that we left in Red Deer when we abandoned our vehicle in a parking lot.
Oh, no.
And could be towed somewhere by now. Like, we don't know where it is, right?
Oh, no.
And so immediately after that conversation, I called my cousin Jason, who I just met. And I was like, hey, Jason, would you mind just driving into the parking lot? And if the license plate is on there, if you could just pull them off, that would be fantastic. And so, like, 20 minutes later, he sends me a text. I got your plates. It's all good.
Oh, that's great.
And he's like, I'll see you at the family reunion. Because Connor, my son, had planned this family reunion. So,
oh, my goodness.
So he said, I'll see you at the family reunion in a few days. So we're like, oh, okay, well, that's that part basically kind of dealt with. But the other thing that they said on the phone, and again, you don't think about these things, is, you know, I said, like, we saw this vehicle and you know, is a little older than what we wanted, but it was also very cheap. So it was like a bit of a trade-off. And we said, if we wanted to buy it, what's the best way to do it? And she said, well, the challenge is that if you buy a vehicle out of province, that when you get it back to BC, it has to be inspected.
Exactly.
The older the vehicle it is, and therefore
that's right.
Or worn out or whatever, the more challenges you're going to have getting it certified to be. So you might buy a vehicle in Edmonton, drive it across the country, drive back, get home. And when you take it in to be inspected, it may not pass inspection or it may cost so much that it's not really reasonable to get it certified in BC.
Exactly.
And so, and then to add to the complexity, the way that Alberta does their insurance, she said, it's just different. And so you need this special letter that says you're allowed to do something. And so it might take a week and all these kind of weird bureaucratic things.
Yeah, there's a lot to it.
Yeah. And but when we said we're going to Manitoba, to Northern Manitoba for the family reunion, she goes, oh, well, if you're in Manitoba, you can just buy a vehicle. Again, you're going to have those inspection issues and getting it certified in BC. But it's way easier to buy a vehicle in Manitoba and register it in BC. So
why would that be? I wonder what the difference would be.
She just said that the way the insurance works is just similar. But I can tell you, like, for someone who has bought probably 20 or 30 vehicles or more, maybe in my life, I know the system a bit, at least in BC, and I like buying cars and, you know, I kind of think about some of these things. I was absolutely exhausted after the hour or so that we were on the phone trying to figure out you know, the insurance, the rental, this, that, and the other thing. And you know, if we were to buy a vehicle or not to buy a vehicle. Of course, the vehicle hadn't been written off. So there was no offer or any of those kinds of things to even pay my mom back for her van because it was her vehicle. And so I was really exhausted. My mom was like, she's like, I got the lady's name and I wrote down stuff, but like the rest of that stuff, it's just, it's gobbledygook things, right? Because it's not terminology or language you use on a regular basis. And again, you're trying to navigate yourself through an insurance system. And no offense, but insurance, like their job is to often not pay insurance, right? Like they want to know, they want to make sure that if they're paying somebody out, that it's actually legitimate. But that gets complicated when you're, you know, out of province. The lady, she was so nice. She's like, don't worry, you'll know if your vehicles are written off by tomorrow. And so, because this is a couple of days after the thing, they said within basically 2 to 3 business days, you should know. And it's already been 2 days, so you're going to know within a day or so. And I said, but there were hundreds of cars. Like, not all of them are going to be written off, but they're all going to have insurance claims. And there's only so many adjusters. So,
yeah, you know, exactly. Very valid.
So just
point.
Logistically, I'm like, I think it's going to take a little bit longer than that. And sure enough, I mean, we were able to travel all the way to Manitoba, to a little place called Fisher Branch, where we had the family reunion. And we're able to drive all the way back to Saskatoon.
Wow.
And when we're in Saskatoon having breakfast, we got the phone call saying that the vehicle had been reviewed and they were able to say that it was written off. Hmm. Now, that's 2 weeks. I think it was about 2 weeks after the accident.
Oh.
So it was 10 to 14 days after the accident was when they actually told us that it was written off. And so, you know, one, it was like we just kind of did our thing and just try to drive and be adaptive as possible. But the other couple things that was interesting is they said, okay, well, now you've only got, I think it was 7 days for your rental vehicle. And we said, well, that doesn't make sense because you said we had $1,500 worth of rental time and we've got it written down. We got a little book with our little notes in there. And they said, yes, if your vehicle is being repaired, you get $1,500 worth. But if it's written off, you only get 1 week with BCAA. And so we're like, okay. And we're traveling home. And I was like, okay. And I'm doing the math and the kilometers in my head. We could make it back in 7 days. That's possible. And you know, and my mom was a little frustrated and you know, and she said, look, you know, what if we don't make it back? And the lady's response was, well, if you are on ICBC or many other insurances, they only give you 2 days, or I think it might be 2 business days or 48 hours or 2 days of rental after your vehicle is written off. So had we had ICBC insurance and not BCAA, we would have had 2 days to get home and not 7. So that was kind of an unexpected kind of information, which again had never been revealed to us anywhere along the way. So if they had written the vehicle off within 2 days of the accident, like they said, when the hailstorm happened, we would have had a week from then to either buy a new vehicle or go to the family reunion and get home. And so using the insurance. Now, you can always obviously pay for things on your own and stuff like that. But when you're expecting insurance to kind of help you, again, you know, they've got rules in there that make it so that it's not too onerous on them as well. So
That's huge. And you would think there'd be an exception. Like to me, I go in a case like that where Mother Nature has spoken and you've ended up with multiple vehicles written off, you would think there would be some kind of humanitarian exception or something in the insurance that would allow people to have that coverage. Because, you know, obviously, if it was a one single vehicle or very small multi-vehicle accident, you would have had that notice that it was written off a lot sooner. You know, when you've got 200 vehicles, like you said, there was that delay. And I don't see why the consumer should have to be stuck on the other end because of that. And it makes you think, what would happen to somebody if they were out there and they weren't covered? And what if they didn't have the financial resources to deal with that? You know, you think, what if somebody was out there and now they're in another province, they're away from home, they don't have the money to rent the car or something? That'd be a nightmare. Like, what would happen? That's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but we were very clear with every person that we spoke with, including that very first phone call before we got out of the vehicle when the hailstorm happened, that we're on a trip that's going to be, and again, we're pretty open-ended. It was going to be 3 or 4 weeks and, you know, it just depended on stuff, and we're traveling to Manitoba and back. And, you know, again, the little things like, you know, take those license plates with you if you think you're going to buy another vehicle. Or once the vehicle's written off, you don't have $1,500 worth of rental value that you can use. You actually, now it's time limited. Like those kinds of things would have been really useful early on, just so that we could at least be prepared for those conversations later on.
Absolutely. And it brings to light so many things, because I know when I'm traveling, even when you get onto the vehicle rental thing, sometimes when I'm traveling, I rent a vehicle and they go, oh, well, are you going to get the extra insurance when you're getting the vehicle rental? Or, you know, if you have credit cards, like I have credit cards that offer vehicle rental insurance. And sometimes I've actually gone back and called my credit card company, said, I just want to verify this is my coverage before I rent this car, because I don't want to turn away this insurance.
Yeah.
And it even gets more complex, because sometimes if you're using the insurance on one card and you've got another insurance policy, doesn't mean you're insured on both policies. One can override the other policy. And that's another thing I think that people sometimes don't understand. They think, oh, I got insurance on my credit card. I got my insurance at home. And I know even with my insurance policy that I have here, and of course, like you living in British Columbia, I've got ICBC, I've got other insurance as well. And I've checked sometimes, I do travel to the Yukon a little bit. So it's kind of the same scenario. Things in the Yukon are done a lot differently than they are in BC as well. And I'm often checking my insurance here before I go there and saying, so I need to know, if I rent a car, what kind of coverage am I going to have? And sometimes I find myself paying for extra insurance, because when you know me, you know, I'm always like Mrs. Cautious. Oh, I don't want to not be covered. And my partner will sometimes remind me, okay, you know, you can break the bank being overcautious. Sometimes you don't have to buy every insurance out there. But that you brought to light such an important thing that can happen. And the whole thing with road travel, and I know even today as we're sitting here with the snow out there and, you know, people are going to be headed out on different road trips. I mean, the story that you told us today is incredible. Like, it's amazing. That's the kind of story not very many people in their lifetime can say, I went through a hailstorm like that. But as the winter's coming up and we're getting up on the, you know, back on the roads here, snowy conditions, things. Can you take any lessons that you might have learned from this and share it with people as we head into winter months, things that they can use to help them to better prepare for road travel?
Yeah, absolutely. And just because I'm been a bit of a car guy, like, you know, with lots of vehicles, I love to travel. I've traveled a lot in the wintertime. Went to high school in a place called Salmon Arm.
I've been there.
And so lots of snow there. I'm an avid skier. I actually am an adaptive snow sports instructor up in Mount Washington. Wow. So I'm going up there every week in the wintertime, at least once or twice. And so it's certainly things that I think about. And you know, some of the stuff is, I think, relatively simple. And you just, you know, just making sure you have things with you. That Rain-X that I talked about, having the Rain-X winter solution for your windshield wiper, again, it just does a much better job of keeping your windshield clean than just a regular windshield wiper fluid does.
Wow.
And it's not much more expensive. It's like 50 cents or a buck more or something like that.
Yeah.
But it just does a much better job of making water bead off your windshield. So even if you're not using your windshield wipers, it just beads off a lot nicer.
Yeah.
And then, of course, something that I've always done, that's keeping at least a blanket, if not a pillow in your vehicle. Now, for me, that was always important because when I am on ferries and stuff, I would just go to sleep and have a nap.
Yeah.
I am a napper. So having that stuff there is obviously pretty important. But if for whatever reason you have to stop someplace for a period of time in the middle of the winter and your vehicle isn't running, having a blanket is certainly, especially if you're overnight, is an absolute necessity. And so making sure that you have a blanket, making sure that you have some snacks and water, absolutely, yeah. Again, critical to have those things. Having a cell phone. Now, I'm also pretty anal about my cell phone. In the morning, I take my cell phone off the charger, so it's fully charged every morning. Not only that, but the first thing I do with my cell phone after I take it off the charger is I actually put it into low battery mode because everything works absolutely fine. But I find that my battery lasts way longer that way than if I don't put in low battery mode. But I think it's just refreshing background apps and, you know, downloading ads.
Yeah, yeah,
or, I don't know, whatever the phone is doing.
Yeah.
But making sure, especially if you are, you know, in an accident or you're trapped on the side of the road or whatever, if you haven't put your phone in low battery mode, do it right away because that's going to allow it to stay on, but actually last. Usually it's, you know, 50%, maybe twice as long. And again, if you're not using it that much, and again, if you're trapped on the side of the road, you're probably not going to be doing the Facebook scroll for an hour. But you may be calling first responders. You may be, you know, contacting family, making sure that they're okay. Which again, if you're in an accident, those are the things that you are going to want to make sure you're doing.
Good
and then
point.
I also, I've got one of those little, you know, I say little, but it's actually a relatively big box that actually allows me to, it's got a battery in it so I can jump the vehicle if it needs to be jumped.
We've got one of those too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's got all the ports
the tires
on it.
If you get a flat tire, bing, all that. Yeah.
Bing. Is it a little yellow one about this big?
Yeah.
I think we got one from Santa last year.
Yeah, you can pump.
Bike tires, and it's got USB ports in it, and it's got the cables for jumping a car, and it's not that heavy. It probably sits about 14 inches around, I think. Yeah, we've got one of those. It's a great idea. And that's a good reminder to pack something like that with you, because I was actually going to say, hey, you know, I've got that little phone charger box. I take it when I'm camping, but it's only good for a couple hours. You know, having that actual portable thing for jumping the car too, that's another good thing. And even on that note, when they talk about batteries, you know, when you're traveling in the wintertime, it's really important to make sure that you've got a good battery in your car because I'm not a mechanic, but I do think that, you know, your cars draw a little bit more in the winter when it's cold. And if you've got a battery that's a little bit on the lower side, you don't want to be stuck on the side of the road, not being able to get your vehicle started, especially if it's cold. So it's another good thing to think about. And I know the blankets you mentioned, me being a former Yukon girl. Yeah, absolutely. We always traveled with blankets in the car and usually had a thermos of something warm. If you're going even on a couple hour road trip, you pack a warm thermos with you, have some extra water bottles. My sister up in the Yukon's a first aid instructor. And the first thing she'd say to us is, where's your first aid kit? Have your first aid kit in the car. You know, she would definitely insist on that. And there's so many other things, you know, even for driving in the winter. And I think back, you know, I worked at an office many, many years ago where we had six different regional offices in that area. And we had a buddy system for people when they were out driving. So if somebody was coming in from one of the communities and it's, you know, a 4 or 5 hour drive, they had to let their buddy know before they left that office. Okay, I'm leaving the office at 9. I expect I'll be in your office by 3 o'clock this afternoon. And, you know, and then if they don't show up by 3:30, 4 o'clock, well, now we're checking the cell phones or get somebody to head out on the road and make sure they're not pulled over with a flat tire. But if you're going to do the buddy system, and this is really important, make sure you check in with your buddy. Because one time I had a gal and I was a safety officer at the time. So I ended up being buddies for a lot of people. And one gal called me and said, I'm coming into town and I'm going to be at a conference tomorrow. So I'll be in late afternoon. And she got to town and forgot to check in with me, her buddy, and headed off to the pub and was having a toddy and a burger and relaxing. And meanwhile, I'm sitting and it's about 3 hours past when she should have checked in. I've been making phone calls, checking around. I'm having to call her manager at home and say, I'm concerned. She's 3 hours overdue. He's getting ready to start calling out people to go and search. You know, now we're involving the whole office. And then all of a sudden I get a little text message. Oops, sorry, I'm just having a beer and a burger. I forgot to tell you I'm back. So, if you have a buddy system, check in with your buddy.
Well, it's funny because we go to the cabin over on Cortez Island on a regular basis, and we've got a boat for that. And so we're really good at calling everybody to say, okay, we're on our way. But sometimes when we get to Cortez Island, you're almost on in vacation mode over there. And so, you know, you're unpacking the vehicle, you're walking the dogs, you're going down to the beach, you're, you know, just decompressing, you're forgetting about life on the big island.
And somebody's worried.
2 hours later, my mom will call and say, did you guys make it there okay?
Oh no. So it's kind of like the boy that cried wolf, that story. So it's like, you don't want to mess up the buddy system too often, because then the one time you really need that buddy and you're sitting on the side of the road, they're like, oh, he's probably sitting in the restaurant again having another burger. You don't want that to happen. And even speaking of that, I mean, even if people go off the road in the winter, and I remember, you know, I've raised teenagers, and I remember years ago having a house full of teenage girls, and this is, again, back in Yukon, it's probably about 20 below that day. And back in those days, the girls used to wear these little ballerina flats, or these little slip-on shoes, and they'd have, you know, their great big puffy winter coats and bare feet and ballerina shoes. And, you know, I'd be saying, hey, you guys, you know, you probably should wear boots when you're in the car. I mean, they look really great, but put your boots on. And I had a couple of girls who were over visiting one day in their ballerina flats, and I insisted that one of them put a pair of boots on from our house before they head out. And sure enough, they had a little fender bender downtown that day, and they had to wait. They were involved with another car. They had to wait for the police to come. One door was dented, and they had to wait till all the statements were done before they could go. And of course, no engines were running, and one girl had boots and one girl didn't. They had to share that set of boots in the car until they could be done with their statements and carry on home. So good reminder, if you're heading out in the snow, don't be wearing your flip-flops. Put on good boots. It's pretty important. And another thing that I think about, and this made me think about it with your trip. So now you're there and you're traveling on the road. You're not expecting to get waylaid. What if you're depending on medications? Say, for example, you've got prescription medications that you take all the time and you're planning for a 3-day trip. So I've got enough meds for 3 days. Maybe I packed a couple extra just in case. But what happens if you get stuck somewhere? So I think personally, if you have medications that you depend on, whether it's heart conditions or anything like that, you probably should make sure you travel with a bit of extra just in case those things happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and it's interesting, like, when I first started teaching adaptive snow sports up at Mount Washington last season, on one of our very first days, I think it might have been our first day of training, at about 3 o'clock, the semi-trailer jackknifed at the bottom of Mount Washington.
No.
We didn't know that, but it was about 3 o'clock. And then usually around like 3:30, that's when people, like, that's when the sort of the runs close down for the morning and people start heading down the hill. So we got down, it was probably about halfway, maybe a little bit more than halfway. And there's a bunch of vehicles there. And people were going slow to begin with because it was icy. And so people are going nice and slow. And so we're going nice and slow. And then it just stops. And I was sitting there going like, oh, man, what's going on? And so I looked on Twitter, and it said something about that that there was vehicles stopped. Mount Washington had posted something. And I just happened to have a friend who is a former volunteer firefighter, paramedic. So, you know, and he knows everything. So I called him up and he goes, yeah, there's a truck that's jackknifed at the bottom, but they got to get a couple of cranes from Nanaimo. So they're going to take forever to get up here. They're going to take hours to get up because, again, it's bad weather. So they're going to take their time. And then once they get there, it's going to take them time to actually get this vehicle righted and out of the way. And so I was like, oh, well, geez, thanks so much. I appreciate that. And then I think about 5 or 10 minutes later, he called me back and he goes, you know, we've got a cabin up on Mount Washington. So he goes, you could go stay there. So we lucked out. We were able to turn around and go up. But we probably sat in line for, you know, maybe a half hour or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, because we had blankets in there, we had the blankets out, we had our snacks in there. And again, I take snacks even as an adaptive snow sports instructor, because we're up on the top of the hill and I've got a student that can't get down and they get hungry. That way I can at least make sure we've got some emergency food and stuff. So, so it was kind of interesting because, again, you sort of think, you know, Mount Washington is like, you know, it's 30 minutes from downtown Courtney to the parking lot up there. So it's not like it's far away, but the weather is so much worse up there. And in fact, you know, I carry a pair of chains with me for the tires, just to make sure that, like, if it says put the chains on, I can pull over, put the chains on. And again, if you buy chains for your tires, the first thing you want to do is you want to actually try them out. Put them on.
Oh, good
under
idea.
Perfect conditions when you're not under duress. Because I will tell you, on Cortez Island, where it doesn't snow all the time, a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it got a massive dump and we couldn't get down the road without chains on. But putting chains on when you're in a foot or two of snow sucks way more.
I bet. I can only imagine.
Yeah. So make sure you, and I kind of call it, it's like a fire drill, right? Like things like that, you actually want to try, like make sure you're good and you've done it a couple of times. So you just feel a little bit more confident about it.
Absolutely.
And even when, like, I talk about that battery booster thing, you know, making sure you're checking it every now and again, making sure that battery is still charged up, because I know with ours, there's a bunch of buttons on it. If you push the wrong button, well, it turns on and it never turns off until the battery's dead.
Maybe I better check ours, because I'm usually the one that's poking the buttons going, what's this do? So, so that's a good thing to note. So there really is a lot of stuff. And I mean, even something else that I thought about, I mean, if you're on Mount Washington, this probably isn't going to matter. But let's say you're out on the road. I mean, I think about last year, look what happened in British Columbia with all those washouts that we had. And I have a friend of mine that I went to high school with. She got stuck in those washouts. I think she was 2 or 3 days in her vehicle before she got out as well, too. And, you know, I think about things that can happen and carrying cash with you. I mean, look what happened when we had all the cell phones go out here this past fall, you know, and people they couldn't access their point of sales machines in many outlets. There was a lot of people shut down.
And that was the first day of Music Fest.
Yeah.
So I run the internet for Music Fest.
Oh, I remember, so because I think I sent you a message and said, there's no cell service, because I thought about you out there, because I thought if you're out there doing stuff, you're going to have a problem if you got no cell service right now. But, but you know, all these things, I mean, technology, and this is funny. I mean, you've owned a computer business before. You're very involved in technology. And as much as I love technology, I have a love-hate relationship some days, because when it works great, it is such a blessing. But when it acts up or we don't have it when we need it, it really can alter things. And yes, we do depend on technology. When we just walk in with that debit card and yes, I'm going to get a room for the night. Yes, I want to put gas in my car. Yes, I have a family in the car and I need to feed the kids. But service is down. How do I pay for it? So, you know, I mean, you and I are from the generation, remember the good old days of putting the credit card slip in the machine, ching, 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 and phoning for authorization, the way things used to be done, you know. And I think most businesses now, if you ask them for a manual credit card slip, they're going to look at you like, what are you talking about? But, You know, good old cash. People still know what good old cash looks like. So yeah, good idea to carry some cash with you. Make sure you've got your proper identification with you. And you also brought up a very valid point. And I go back to that little password book again. Not that you should be carrying your passwords all over and leaving your password book someplace. That could be a problem. But knowing that your critical sites that you might need to access, and I've had this when I've been traveling going, oh, I have to be here a little bit longer than expected. I need my online banking password. I need to transfer money to pay for this bill. And now I'm out on the road. If you don't have those passwords with you, you can have a little bit of an issue. And I've done that before. And I've learned my lesson the hard way, actually phoning and calling my son and saying, can you go in the such and such place and find my book and find this password? Because I need it. You know, so yeah, you don't want to be doing that either. So there's a lot of stuff that you have to plan. And it was interesting because I went on some of the Transport Canada sites, you know, before we were having this little chat, and I was just having a look at things they recommend. And I remember, you know, back in the Yukon, same thing. They always used to tell you in the wintertime, you know, have your proper snow tires, you know, and carry a shovel with you. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. And a little trick that I can share with you that I've done in the Yukon when I had my car once and it was just skidding out and I couldn't get going and I wasn't stuck in anything major, just there was ice and I couldn't get going. Took my floor mats out of the front and you stick the floor mats underneath your tires and it gives you that little bit of grip to get over that patch ice to get going. But then you also have to be able to pull over and go back and get your floor mats. But that's a whole other trick you can do too. But I mean, there's lots of things to keep in mind. I mean, definitely, you know, times are changing with the weather right now. We're, you know, just getting into December pretty soon. And I know today, even listening to the weather report, they're calling for winds going up to 70 to 90 kilometers an hour near the water today. We've got snow falling. We're going to have a few storms today. So yeah, we want to make sure that everybody takes that extra step before they get out on the road. And I, you know, again, not everybody's going to hit a hailstorm, but even a 1 hour delay can turn into 6 hours or 8 hours. And it's pretty important to be prepared when you head out on the road.
Even with ferry waits, accident or anything, but you could end up waiting someplace for a ferry for a long period of time. And if we take the ferries over to Cortez Island, for instance, the ferry from Quadra to Cortez, if there's a one ferry wait, that's 2 hours you're going to be waiting. And in the summertime, especially on a long weekend, you could be three ferry waits easy. Now, luckily, there's a store nearby. But like you said, you want to make sure you have the ability to buy stuff, that you got the snacks and stuff. But there's two things that actually it dawned on me that I do that I haven't mentioned yet. One is, and of course, you don't have to go in to insure your vehicle anymore. So some people can just do it over the phone now. But if you go in to any ICBC broker, they have little cards and they're accident cards. And they used for a while, they had them out, but then they, I don't know if they were going through too many of them. But if you ask for those little accident cards, it's a little card and it's got all the pertinent information you want to ask if you're ever in an accident, which, of course, when you're in an accident, again, you go into shock, you're not thinking straight.
Absolutely.
And so having a little guideline to kind of walk you through what to do if you're ever in an accident. So there's that little thing. And then the other, when you're talking about the buddy system, you know, as parents, you know, I told my kids I wasn't going to buy them an iPhone, which is why you give our kids your empty so they can make money for their phone. And so they all have their little iPhone, but they've earned their money to pay for it themselves.
That's good.
But we put them on, like we're all part of a family in iPhone so that we can do the Find My Phone and we can actually see where each other is. And I think to your point around that buddy system, especially for parents, you want to make sure that if they've got an iPhone that you have that set up. And again, it's not necessarily a question of snooping on the kids or whatever, but it's really just, it's two things. One, if there is an emergency that you can deal with it. And then probably what's more likely to happen is when they lose their cell phone, you can make it beep.
Oh, I better start paying attention to that because I'm always losing my cell phone. That's what I need. I mean, this poor old thing, I don't know how many times it's like, where's my keys? Where's my cell phone? I think the day I turned 50, I had to lose my cell phone-itis. So I don't know. But that's a good reminder, though, you know, to have that on there. So, you know, if somebody is in an accident, maybe they're not able to make that call. Perhaps yeah. they've driven off the road. And I don't mean just to sound all negative. I mean, sometimes it could just be you're off. You could just be off the road for whatever reason, you know, you might need to be able to track, but that's a really good point. And is there anything else you can think of before we wrap it up that you would want to offer for advice
you
to
know,
people out on the road?
I think, you know, we haven't talked about it necessarily. I kind of alluded to it before, but one is just driving for the actual environment. And
I agree.
And I go back to a trip I did from Salmon Arm to Victoria on the Coquihalla, and coming down into Hope, it was very slushy. It was snowing. It was raining. The roads were very slick. And it was just that kind of a weird, slushy, icy situation where hydroplaning, plus there was ice and stuff. And so even though I had a four-wheel drive with winter tires, I was doing 50 or 60 kilometers an hour. Now, the posted limit was probably like 100, 120, whatever it was. And there was a vehicle in front of me, and I was about four or five vehicle lengths behind that vehicle in front of me. And then this car came along doing the speed limit, and it was a four-wheel drive vehicle, but, you know, it zipped by me, and I just was like, what the hell? And we're going around this corner going into Hope, right next to the river, and it went sideways, lost control, got in front of the vehicle, slid in front of the vehicle that was in front of me. Then its tires gripped and it started going towards the river, hit the concrete barrier, and literally just started flipping down the road, down the highway, given how fast he was going.
Oh, yeah.
The person terrible. In front of me, who was also going slow, was unfortunately, they ended up hitting the side, but I mean, very minor. I was able just to slow down, you know, put my four-way flashers on and stuff. But, you know, that driving for the environment, really being cautious, right? Because, you know, if you're in an accident, that's going to be one of the first questions ICBC or whoever your insurance provider is going to ask you is, you know, were you driving responsibly? Were you being reasonable? And I think it's one thing to know that you have to be somewhere at a specific time, but it's far more important to actually get there. So
I agree. Get home-itis doesn't pay. And driving for the conditions, because you brought up a really good point when somebody's going fast and, you know, maybe the posted speed limit is 70 kilometers or 90 kilometers an hour, but that's based on the conditions being good at that point in time. If the conditions don't warrant it, it doesn't mean you should drive that. And I know it's always a gray area and people get really annoyed, like, oh, they're going so slow, I have to pass them, they're going to cause an accident. But if it's really icy out there, maybe you shouldn't be going the actual posted speed limit because, it might not be safe to do so. And tailgating is another one for me. It drives me nuts when you're driving in the winter and somebody is riding your back end, because you go, if I have to put my brakes on for someone else, you're going to slide into the back and I'm going to pay the price. And I've been rear-ended in my car on the way to Campbell River a few years back, had whiplash from it. And I know how fast it can happen. And if somebody hits that back end, it's not fun. So no tailgating in the winter time either.
Not at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
Well, in that accident by the Coquihalla, the other thing that I found out that I didn't know before that, so that car that was in front that did all the flips and such, you know, we waited about, it was probably an hour and a half because it was such horrible conditions when they called in. I called 911 and they just said, again, there's been multiple accidents.
Wow.
I said, this one's more critical because the car was flipping and stuff. I had the first aid kit. They didn't have a first aid kit. So, you know, use the first aid kit to get things under control. But when the ambulance finally got there, again, it was probably a couple hours later. The driver of the vehicle wasn't injured, but his wife was. Well, put the wife in the ambulance and they told him, well, you don't get to come with us because you're not a patient. And so he looked at me and I went, I guess I'm giving a ride into town to the hospital because, and so, and again, they couldn't take all, because they were on vacation or they couldn't take all their stuff. So he threw all his stuff in the back of my vehicle. And again, just basically had to abandon his vehicle on the side of the road. But those kinds of things, just, you know, when, again, under duress, lots of accidents that day. And so the ambulance is just like, we need as much space as possible in each of our vehicles. So.
Totally get it. Oh boy. So I guess, yeah. So now that we've talked all about these things that can happen on the road, there's lots of good things that can happen. And I think one of the good things that I'm going to do after this, we've been talking about snacks. So now I think I have this big urge right now that now after we do this, I have a couple errands to run. I think I'm going to go carefully hit the roads. It's snowing a little bit, and I'll probably hit a drive-through today and grab a couple snacks on the way. Sounds like a good idea. So I guess we probably should wrap it up pretty quick here. I'm sure you've got a busy day ahead of you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, boy, I am just absolutely excited that we had this chat today. Thank you so much. I learned so much from it. And I definitely am going to think twice about when I head out on the road. I'm probably going to go check my car now, too, and make sure I have all the things that I talked about. It's one thing for me to talk the talk, but I better walk the walk or drive the drive, I guess. Make sure I'm doing it right. Well, thanks so much again. I really appreciate you coming on the show today, Bob.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And again, stay safe out there.
You bet. You too. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to click like and share it so others can enjoy it also. Join the Lindy's Audio Cafe podcast group for updates. Oh, and positive reviews are always welcome as well. Check the show notes for updated links. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.